Yes, welcome back to the final show of this week. It was Valentine's Day yesterday, and I think we all fell in love with football once again. The Europa League charmed us with the thrills and spills that we don't normally seem to get or seem to crop up in the main headlines when we look at the Europa League. But it was a fantastic evening of football. A man who's probably watched, I guess, every single one of the 16 games that took place last night is joining us now on the line. Mr. Andy Brassel, the big bad Brass himself, joining us on World Football Daily. How are you doing today, mate?
Hello, mate. I watched a few of them.
A few of them, yeah. I'm imagining you sat there from, you know, 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock this morning till now, just with the TV on, going through every single one of them, mate. That's for sure. Dedication to the end, my man. So what did you get through from last night? Which games really caught your eye the most?
I was at Spurs versus Lyon, and I remember Hugo Lloris before it had said he expected a match of Champions League level, a match of Champions League intensity, and I think that's by and large what we got, really. Two very good teams, which I wasn't really expecting, because Lyon have had a couple of really poor results and really poor performances domestically in the last couple of games, and defended really badly, which was always going to be a problem against Tottenham. But you know, in a midweek at White Hart Lane under the lights, the atmosphere is incredible. So I really, really enjoyed that. And a few surprising results as well, with especially Atletico losing at home to Rubin Kazan. I thought that was a bit of a surprise. Of course, Rubin not even quite at full strength yet, because Jan and Villa made the trip with them, but he wasn't quite ready to play. And I think what was notable really about both the Europa League going back further in the week with the Champions League, some teams that have been in cold storage, just coming out and playing really well straight away, Zenit, Angie, you know, it's almost as if not playing on really heavy pitches and, you know, getting some lovely warm weather training is good for you.
let's talk about that Zenit game against Liverpool and how much they actually ended up dominating Liverpool for the majority of that game, despite it being a strong Liverpool side out. Are they missing Daniel Sturridge already, Liverpool, do you think?
Maybe a little. But to be fair, even though Zenit had plenty of the game, Liverpool had their chances first half. And I don't know. It's strange how Luis Suarez seems to have rediscovered his profligate self. I never really saw him as someone who was especially natural finisher. I always took it that he scored a lot of goals first for Ajax and then this season for Liverpool, really as a byproduct of his all-round brilliance. So I think he's a bit of a difficult situation where you always have to rely on him for goals, even though he can provide a lot of them. But I think it was just a little reminder that they're a work in progress. And talking of works in progress, it shows that after the whole disequilibrium of Witzel and especially Hulk coming in, Zenit have looked within, really, and sort of come back with, they had this really strong setup in the first place, this really strong core to their team, and they seem to be making the most of that. Because, you know, the most disappointing thing about them in Europe, taking away, of course, the 2008 UEFA Cup, is the fact that in the Champions League, every time it's looked like they might step up, they've just really seemed to shrink into themselves, go into their shells when they've had big games and games against big name teams. And I feel like they definitely did that against Milan in the home game. They started that really slowly. They started the game against Malaga really slowly, even though Malaga left a lot of their first choice players out. So it was good to see them rise to the occasion against what was, you know, what still is in Liverpool a huge European and global name.
How important is it for Zenit for that harmony to be back? Because as we said at the beginning of the season, it was all over the place, the dressing rooms. It was like watching an episode of Hollyoaks, if you will. And especially having people like Hulk and Denisov at each other. It was bad to have your creative midfielders and your attackers not on the same page. And it seems to have come right for them now.
Yeah, I think it was always up to the senior players to deal with that. I don't think there's really any suggestion from Hulk's direction of there being any sort of conflict. It was just the feeling of you know, the players who are already there to someone coming in being paid a lot more money. But I think really the national reaction to that coloured the way it went as well. You know, you had people from Vladimir Putin downwards coming out and saying, look, you know, don't be such spoiled brats. We want not sort of old stars who are on the way down coming here and earning a load of money, but the people who are going to be tomorrow's stars. Now, I thought that was interesting to hear such a high-ranking politician, well, the most high-ranking politician, come out with that. And I think that was a little bit of a reality check. Of course, there's a suggestion that the same thing might happen at Rubin. There have been a few little murmurs that players have either broken off contract negotiations or started asking for more. Now they know what Jan and Vula is getting, which is a very generous salary. Well, obviously, it's a very generous salary because it completely blew QPR out of the water. So I think this is a narrative that will run for a little while yet. In the Russian Premier League, and you know, you're always going to have these sort of difficulties when you're trying to build a league's global profile. But in terms of that, I think, you know, Zenit are a really strong name to go out there and promote the Russian League. I think what was really interesting that there was in a copy of the Times, today's copy of the Times, the UK newspaper, Tony Barrett wrote a really good piece about how the Zenit fans, despite having this reputation of being like one of the most racist clubs in Europe, were actually great. Were really welcoming to Liverpool. The match went off really well in a great atmosphere, and it sort of showed up like a lot of the noisy right-wing minority are just that, a minority of cranks, and that the club is not having it. And Spalletti has already on a number of occasions stood up and said, look, we don't judge players on colour. We want whatever are the best players for us, and a multicultural model is the one we want to take forward. And I think in terms of improving the reputation of the Russian Premier League abroad, I think that's really important. In terms of building towards World Cup 2018, that's really, really important. What Zenit did last night on and off the pitch was a really good step forward for Russia.
And all signs, obviously, on Russian football, all eyes, sorry, all on Russian football leading into that massive European tournament. You look at Zenit, you look at Anzhi, they've been on the borders, if you will, of kind of Champions League knockout stages and getting to that next level. How long do we have to wait for Russian football in general to reach it? Because the money's there. And we still just season after season wait for it to all click into place and for them to start making a run in the Champions League.
Yeah, well, of course, this is the first full season that they're having a winter season in common with a lot of the big European leagues. So I think you can argue that it'll be interesting to see how that works with them on a theoretically level playing field. Of course, they'll still have quite a long winter break, very much like Ukraine, but it'll be interesting to see how that works, because of course they've just come out of this 18-month season as they switched over their timetables, which of course it had a break in the middle, but I can't help feeling that it affected Russia when it got to Euro 2012. So it'll take a while. It'll take, as I said, the integration of highly paid new players and, you know, the very talented players who already are in Russia. But I think Anzhi and Zenit are quite different cases, because Zenit have been building something over a number of years since 2008, and Anzhi have come a really long way very, very quickly. But I think the sort of players they've brought in have been very encouraging. A good mix of very, very big names and also rising players, and you know, just good pros who know what they're doing, together with some good young Russian players as well. And having Hiddink in charge, I think, is very, very important as well.
When we look at some of the other games just around the Europa League last night as well, Andy, moving away from Rusky football and looking at Inter Milan last night, when you see Inter, they're 12 points off the top of Serie A, the title race is seemingly dead for them. Does the Europa League take a renewed emphasis for them? Because they went out and put on a very strong performance last night.
Yeah, they really did. And I think that is quite important, as you say, because they do need to get in the Champions League. That is the bottom line for them, because they're moving towards a more sustainable financial model. And as Valencia have shown in the past, it's one thing selling players and getting big earners off the salary, off the salary bill. But I think the most important thing is qualifying for the Champions League year after year after year, because the gap at the moment between what a club earns in the Champions League and the Europa League is absolutely immense. It's pocket change, really, what you earn in the Europa League. And yeah, it's nice to have the trophy, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're going to build a sustainable financial future for a top-level club, you have to be qualifying for the Champions League on a regular basis. There's no doubt about that. As far as the format of the competition goes and getting players used to playing in European ties week in, week out, in conjunction with the league programme, in that way it's very important, especially for the younger players in the team. And of course there are going to be a few of those, like Kovacic, who's hopefully going to blossom into something really, really special for them. But they're building a whole new team, so I think to have that experience is really, really important.
The experience is important for them. And is it still important, though, to get a piece of silverware potentially for Inter Milan, not just domestically, but also in Europe as well? Because we still have that kind of distant memory of Jose Mourinho and their treble season, and it's starting to fade away, the kind of European glitz and glamour around Inter Milan. Would that Europa League trophy this season mean a hell of a lot to this club?
It would mean something. I don't think it would go anywhere to compare with 2010, which, as you say, the further away it gets, it sort of feels a bit anomalous, really. And I often wonder how differently Mourinho's tenure at Inter would be judged if he hadn't won that. You know, if they'd have gone out in the semi-final against Barcelona. If Chelsea had played a bit better against them in the last 16 or whatever, of course that was a great triumph for them and that was a great year, but it was almost like a great 6 months, really. If you look at it realistically and if you're honest with yourself about, you know, where they were at the time, I think, you know, it was a productive run. It was a productive collective effort. It was a couple of players, especially Snyder and Julio Cesar, hitting the best form of their lives at just the right time. But you know, the Mourinho era could have been viewed completely differently if that was the case, and they were always going to have to make economies after that season. So you know, that worked perfectly for him. But you know, that they are in the middle of a big rebuild, and a big rebuild that's absolutely overdue. So, you know, winning a European trophy would be a nice boost and a nice endorsement that they're going in the right direction. But you know, I don't think it'd compare in any way to what happened in 2010.
Unlike Inter Milan and other sides that are trying to reduce their kind of costs and outgoing wage bills, etc., what about Chelsea and the financial implications of not getting far in this tournament for them? Because in terms of financial fair play, isn't it? I mean, it'd be a fantastic for them to get there, to go all the way to the end of this competition and pick up the few odd million that they can get. Anything to try and level the books a bit.
I think the amount you make out of the Europa League, I don't think it's really going to make any difference, because with Chelsea, you're always talking about tens of millions in advertising revenue, tens of millions in player expenditure. And like I said, the gap between what you would get for winning the Champions League and what you would get for winning the Europa League is absolutely enormous. I think the winning club in the Europa League, obviously Atletico Madrid, I think they made about 3.5-4 million out of it last season, which is nothing, really. And if you get to say the last 16, you've already made probably half of that. So that's not really going to make any sort of a difference for them. It'll be a boost for the fans. I think the thing is it sounds a really negative way of looking at it, but you think if they exit the competition, it would just be another stick to beat poor Benitez with, and I think it's fair to say he's not going to be here at the end of the season, whatever happens from now on. So you know, he's a manager who is very, very capable in Europe, as he showed with Valencia in 2004, as he showed with Liverpool in 2005. So wherever he goes next, it's something quite nice to go on his CV if he were to manage it.
You mentioned this game earlier in the beginning of our chat, Andy, and Tottenham-Lyon was a fantastic game filled with three incredible goals. This Lyon performance was a very classic away side in a first leg of a Champions League, not too adventurous, looking to hit on the counter. Where has this sort of performance been in the last 2 weeks? Because the losses to Lille and Ajaccio were really dire performances in Liga.
Yeah, they were really bad, and they were really bad defensively. So I think, you know, whoever they were playing last night, whether it had been Tottenham in the Europa League or whether it had been Brest away in Liga, I think they had to sort themselves out defensively. I don't think they looked completely secure. I think the fact they stiffened midfield by bringing Fofana in there rather than Grenier as a playmaker definitely helps give them that shape. I think they defended better as the game went on because I feel Umtiti, who's very, very experienced, left back. He's mainly played as centre back, and of course he's still only 19 years old. He got no protection really from Lisandro Lopez in the first half, but in the second half, he really stuck at it and helped him out, which was a good job because he was on a booking, and that's why Umtiti got the freedom to come forward as well. But I think Lyon were always going to have these little blips in a season. Because they've got a really thin squad, so they're in trouble when, say, Lovren was suspended and couldn't play. They're going to have problems from overusing players, like Bisevac, who's been great for most of the season, the other centre-back, but had a really, really poor game at Ajaccio, maybe just because he's played like every game. It's really, really difficult for them as well because of the fact that they've got lots of young players who are still learning the game. You know, Umtiti, Grenier, Fofana, even Gonalon, who's a little bit older at 23, are going to make mistakes. That's part of it. And, I think coming back from that bad run, even though they did lose the game last night, putting on a performance like that against such a high quality side and such a high intensity game is a really good step in the right direction.
Another player that caught the eye from that Lyon side last night was Lacazette as well. Had a couple of decent runs in the first half and almost pulled off a fantastic goal in the second half. Only 21, very inexperienced like a lot of this Lyon side, but have you seen a lot of how much potential do you see, Andy, in Lacazette?
He's got stacks. There's absolutely no doubt about it. He was a central striker when he came through the Lyon Academy. And he's moved out right almost as a Gavi replacement because it's that traditional Lyon 4-3-3 that they play with a central striker and then two wide ones supporting. He's got terrific work rate. And talking of his potential, well, I actually wrote in my article for ESPN that we thought of Remy Gard going back to North London, which was a major touchstone in his career. It's a major touchstone in Lacazette's career as well, because back in 2009, he scored the winning goal in the European Under-19 Championship for France on a Friday, then celebrated with his friends and family and teammates, got the first Eurostar to London on Saturday morning, played for Lyon against Celtic in the Emirates Cup in the afternoon, and then on the Sunday played in the Emirates Cup for Lyon against Milan. So he played three games in 3 days, which I think shows you he's quite keen to play. So he's very, very industrious. He could still do with a few more goals, and he says, you know, he finds it mentally hard when he doesn't score for a bit. I think he's only scored three this season, but because he does so much work on the flank, really. But I think he might have to get used to that, because I can see him staying out there for a while longer. He's really good at running with the ball. He gets stuck in defending as well. He's really quick, and he can get round the outside of fullbacks to the line with his pace. So it could be a good spot for him. And I think it's interesting if you look maybe a couple of years forward. Say for the France national team. When I went to France, Germany the other week, they had Moussa Sissoko on the right side of midfield, which, you know, didn't really suit him at all. So you wonder, in the future, maybe that's a spot where Lacazette could find some joy.
Is there a problem at all? We've seen a number of, you know, French youngsters and stars come through the ranks and lose their heads slightly in a always combustible French national team. How do they get someone like Lacazette coming through the ranks as a youngster still, but with so much potential? How do they keep him on the right track and stop him from going down this kind of combustible mentality that the French players seem to have on occasion?
Well, I think really you've got to look at the squad as a whole rather than just the young players. And, you know, any group, and I think Belgium are a good example of this, any group of fantastic young players is only as good as the senior players who they have in there to guide them. And so Belgium has sort of grown into that, in the fact that Vincent Kompany emerged as a real leader, and Thomas Vermaelen to a lesser extent. So really, it's not so much up to just Lacazette and Sissoko and players like that themselves. It's about the players who are becoming the senior players who've got to guide the team forward. So Hugo Lloris, the captain, who I think is a great choice to stick with as captain, and Didier Deschamps obviously feels the same, because he said before the Germany game, as long as I'm in charge, he'll be the captain. And that's all there is to it. I think Mandanda from the bench, of course, who's the club captain at Marseille, he's a really good example too. Yoann Cabaye, who is now becoming a senior player at the heart of a good Premier League side, even though they've had their difficulties this season. So those are the sort of players. Frank Ribéry, even, he's really grown up. He's really shown a work ethic, who looked a pariah in the national team like maybe 12, 13 months ago, and now he's the first name on the team sheet. He's talking about getting 100 caps. It's up to them really to lead the way and to create a culture in which the young players can flourish.
And let's hope that they are able to keep a level head on that French side, because we don't want to see any more spats like Sami Nasri had with the journalists at Euro 2012, that's for sure.
Andy, frightening business.
it makes you worried about stepping into the mix zone again, doesn't it, Andy, mate, with players doing like that. It's a pleasure to have you back on the show today, mate. We'll always love getting into a chat with you. We could chat for hours about Europa League and the games coming up this weekend, but I know you're a busy man, so we will let you go this Friday and get down the pub and enjoy a pint before the football this weekend. Thank you so much, mate.
Cheers. Take care.
Have a good one, mate. Andy Brassel joining us on the show today to talk all things about last night's Europa League games, covering the major stories coming out of the Europa League last night, and having an in-depth look at that Lyon side that are in action, of course, this weekend as well. A 2-1 loss away on the road last night against Tottenham Hotspur, but it's not all bad news, and it will set them up nicely for that game against Bordeaux.
We know you love that free bit from us here at WFD. Now go and sign up and get access to a huge archive of our content and interviews, and download the best daily podcast in America. Go to worldfootballdaily.com and become a member today.